Welcome everyone to the PBOL show featuring NJ Chat with Nikita and Jewel. So we're going to get right on into it. This is the second part of Alien Earth. We're going to go through episodes 5 through 8. I'm going to do a little bit of a rewind here for those of you all that missed last week and the episodes that we went through, which was 1 through 4. And I'm going to go ahead and let Jewel bring us in.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm Jewel. Welcome. We're going to rewind the first 4 episodes, as Nikita said. Thank you again for being here, Nikita. And if you remember the first 4 episodes of Alien Earth, we are on Earth. It has been divided by corporations. We have a crazy lunatic, very arrogant young man who thinks he owns everything, and a company corporation that's not allowed to touch terra firma, not allowed to touch the earth. And it's run by a young lady who is older than him, but has been sending her individuals to space to research new entities, new things, new discoveries. And in part of this discovery, we know on this ship in space, they were researching and looking at different species. We have xenomorphs, which is how we get the whole alien Earth thing. And xenomorphs, as we remember from the original franchise of Aliens, they are the aliens with the big, big heads and the double mouths and the face huggers. And then they incubate inside a warm, hot body. And then they pop out through your belly. And it's really disgusting. It's really gross. You can't slice and dice them because their blood is acid. They don't have eyeballs. That's important. Remember that. They track their prey, everything that's hot and warm-blooded and alive. And feels fear would be their prey. And they use infrared technology where they feel the warmth, they feel the heartbeats, they can sense it. And again, they have no eyeballs. That's important, because in this iteration of Alien, one of the species, along with flora and fauna that looks like plants that can consume individuals and bugs that can consume robotics and machinery and iron deposits and metallurgy type things. We have this eyeball creature. it looks like an octopus, or squid. And what we know from episodes 1 through 4, which created by Noah Hawley. So thank you for that. Mr. Hawley, your brain, I don't know, brother, it's amazing because it's freaking us out. Episode 1 was Neverland. Episode 2, Mr. October. Episode 3, Metamorphosis. And episode 4, Observation. We have this weird octopus looking eyeball that looks like it's an ocular nerve. So it looks like an eyeball with a bunch of little irises all around it, right? And it's got tentacles like a squid or an octopus. And we know it's smart because in the first episode of Neverland, as a scientist was, you know, poking around with some of the species, it was trying to tell her the face huggers have left their enclosure, and it was smart enough to tell her or try to tell her, but it doesn't have a mouth because it's an eyeball. Duh. Right? So it's an alien, so we don't understand as humans. We also have the larger story of Peter Pan. That's where we got Neverland. All of the children who were suffering terminal illnesses have now been the first instances of synthetic bodies with human brains. The future has been divvied up by corporations, as I said earlier, and there are rules on who is on this planet and coming from Earth. And in the future, the race for immortality will come in three guises: cybernetically enhanced humans, those are cyborgs, and we know that the gentleman that was the security guard officer and head boss of the ship, Moro, he is a cyborg. We learned that in episodes 1 through 4. We have synthetics, and those are beings that are all just AI. There's no human about them. And in this new franchise, we have the amalgam of the two, and those are hybrids. And Wendy, who is Marcy, and she is the first one. Her brain has been downloaded into the synthetic body, and you have a few children that they are testing this on because a child's mind is so capable of learning quickly, hungry for knowledge, wanting to explore, semi-fearless because children are dumb and they don't know really what to fear until it's already too late. But they're ever growing, ever understanding, and they're not filled with these preconceived notions of things that that you should already know because you done lived through and experienced life. And so that's what we're going through between episodes 1, 2, 3, and 4. Again, remember, it's Neverland, Mr. October, Metamorphosis, and Observation. We're tossed into the story of Wendy being the head lost boy, and she sees that her brother is still alive. She reaches out to him because he's a medic, and he's on the ship trying to salvage this research and development species. The boy genius is saying, no, you can't have those things. It's landed on Earth. They're mine. And uses her brother as the tool to be able to control Wendy the way he wants. And she is smarter than any of the other children. He's confessed this to the psychiatrist that was supposed to be guiding these children through this transition of basic, I'm about to die as a child, to almost immortality. Now I'm a synthetic and I don't know what to do. So she was supposed to guide them. Her husband gets lost in the mesh of the madness. And we have one of the kids being threatened by Moro. Bring me the research, bring me the egg, that face hugger. And he's like, okay, bet, because you got my mama and my family members, because they're children. You have Timothy Oliphant. He is the full synthetic. He is Kirsch. He has bugged the children. He knows that two of them are conniving with the cyborg for the other company. And he just wants to see what's happening. He's just learning. He's calculating. He's methodical. And he's not telling the big boss man what's happening. He's just seeing what's happening with life. And we enter into this new fifth episode in space. No one, ... And obviously in space, no one can hear you scream is usually how that ends. And that's where we are. We are a spacebound vessel for research purposes careened into Earth. All of the people except for the cyborg Moro, who is the head man, he's running the show. He's fighting to get his property back, to get it back to the corporation owner, the gentleman who owns all of the land that the ship landed on, says no. He's been the top researcher and the bankroller for creating this new form of synthetics. Wendy and the rest of the children have been transformed into synthetic bodies. They are now hybrids. Wendy says, I don't like what you're doing. You can't have my brother. I am a human. Kirsch says, but are you? Because he's a full-blown AI synthetic, and we are just battling. Who gets to own the synthetics and the hybrids? Who gets to own the aliens? Are the children really children? And is that crazy lady pregnant? Because she's kind of wackadoo. We're on that as well. This is really, it's off the wall. Great show so far. What did you think? And what do you remember from the first four episodes? And where are we going into Nikita? Again, thank you for the welcome. Where are we at?
Thank you, Jewel. Thank you. Great job there. So let me say this before we move forward. For those of you that accidentally happen upon us somewhere in the netherworld of your podcast world, and don't know who we are, we're Nikita and Jewel. And this is Blurred Words, segment of our BBOL show. I am Nikita.
And I'm Jewel.
And welcome, welcome everyone. So as Jewel has said, we are here at this point now in episodes 1 through 4 when the ship, you know, hits the earth and the aliens get out. We got an eyeball creature. We got the kids don't know if they're human and they're not, their sense. And all kind of heck is breaking loose. And really we have this soldier there. For those of you that don't know the cast of this show, and again, please check out our previous episodes 1 through 4. And we have Sydney Chandler as Wendy, Timothy Oliphant as Kirsch, Lily Newmark as Nibs, Anthony Lothar as Hermit, the brother, Risha Murjani as Zoya Zaveri, Samuel Blinken as Boy Cavalier, which you know, he's very spoiled. Samuel Blinken did a very good job here, making me not like him very much. So good job, sir. Essie Davis, Dame Sylvia, Irana James, Curly, David Riesdahl as Arthur Sylvia, Kit Young as Toodles, Adi Edmondson as Adam Ines, Babua Cisse as Morrow. Morrow is the security guy and the cyber, and he has a cybernetic arm. So he plays a very key role here. Sandra Yee as Sensindivir, Sandra Yee Sensindivir as Yutani. Again, apologies for not pronouncing it correctly. Mad respect for every actor. Jonathan Ajayi as Smee. Give this man an award, please, please, please. He played a little boy so well, I was beside myself. Karen Aldridge as Shibuzo, Adarsh Guryab as Slightly. You know, Slightly, another great character. Jamie Bisping, Malachite, DM as Malachite, DM Camille as Siberian, Mats Reinhardt as Bronski, and Mo Bar-El as Rashidi. So now we're all caught up with characters, and we're going to jump into episode 5. Episode 1 through 4 was excellent. When we were introduced to the eyeball, I'm not sure whether to call her Marge or Jenny. Not sure if it's a her, but I think she is because she's super smart. That eyeball was really trying to tell everybody, what are y'all doing? Okay. And I was transformed by this. I mean, I love this show, Alien Earth. I'm a huge Alien fan. And I think Mr. Noah Hawley did a brilliant, brilliant, masterful job. So we're going to go into episode 5, which in space, no one. So .. by the way. And you know, it's no one hears you scream, of course. Outer space vessel in peril leads to a dangerous reckoning. That episode was written and directed by Noah Hawley, and he once again left no crumbs on the floor. So we actually, at this point, find out what happens on the ship. Because as you're going into episodes 1 through 4, you only see like flashbacks to them on the boat, on the ship, sorry. And then you know, like you're like, how did this all happen? We get to the beginning. And you start to find out what's going on. There was a really, I think, big kind of shocker there, right? As to who caused all of this, because that's what you're asking. How did they get out? What went down? What is the purpose? Why is all of this happening? And we find out in episode 5, we get the backstory and Morrow, what he plays and what his whole purpose is for being on that ship. The captain loses her gig because she can't control the aliens, you know, have escaped. They're trying to find out who let the aliens escape. They have cameras all over this ship. And, you know, all kinds of things are occurring. The aliens have gotten out, and they're out here. The xenomorph is just slaughtering people. And the captain, although afraid, she tries to stand up, and well, you know how that went. And Mara, being the security guy, takes over and does what has to be done. I was like, dang, Mara. I mean, first of all, he's talking to someone back on land somewhere who's giving him his orders. He takes over control of the ship, and then he just leaves them hanging. And I'm like, oh my God, that guy only cares about the prime directive. This is better than Star Trek, and I love Star Trek, but he is about that prime directive. And he understands what the mission is. They don't know what's going on. And I'm telling you, for those of you that don't know, we do spoilers. So the bottom line is, when we saw who was, you know, sabotaging the ship and had been talking to the boy genius back there on land, you know, making a plan. So Cavalier always knew what was going to happen. It was a back and forth. And this is another thing that I like about this show. We see what's happening back, and we see what's happening on the ship now. And I love that this ship has a classic kind of look to it. It's kind of like George Jetson's, you know, very 70s, 80s, you know, kind of harkens back to the original Alien. And, you know, you're paying attention to this and thinking to yourself, man, I mean, they're supposed to be in the future, obviously, right? But it kind of looks classically old. I thought that was by design, and I thought it was very well done. I thought it was kind of a cool little niche little thing for those of you that are fans of Alien. So I'm watching as Mara does what he needs to do. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, man, he didn't care anything about those people on that ship. He only cares about the prime directive. And we move into, once we get this backstory, a lot of awareness occurs. And what you also find out in episode 5 is that the eyeball was trying to warn everybody. Marge was rolling her eyeballs around, and tentacles was there, eyeball around, and tentacles everywhere. And wasn't nobody paying attention, you know? And I'm just like, that's what you get for not paying attention. Y'all are scientists. You're supposed to be aware of everything, and you're missing some really important things. Like when the face huggers jump on that dude, that was a jump scare. A lot of jump scares, and that's what makes it fun. For those of you that are horror fans, for those of you that like thrills, it was almost as cool as riding a roller coaster for some of you that still do that. At certain stages, you probably got to give it up because heart attack and everything. But this was really, really, really one of those, oh my God, you know, and I did that a lot. I did that a lot during this. I was like, I can't believe it. Or, ooh, or like, oh, that's so gross. Alien. I love it. Jewel?
Thank you so much. In space, no one can hear you scream was a tagline used in the 1979 original Alien movie, Ripley Scott's. And that is, as Nikita has already said, the name of episode 5, the Trypanrhynchus Oculus. I'm going to try that again. Trypanrhynchus Oculus. Or as Nikita now calls her, Marge, try to explain, gesticulate, undulate, just fancy words to say, using his tentacle legs to knock on the wall and say, y'all seeing this, right? That face hugger is going to eat your face. Nobody listened. It's the only animal with sense in the show, it seems like. So we're in space, no one, right? And this one was written and directed by Noah Hawley. And it's in flashbacks, as Nikita said, we have the Maginot. Before it reached Earth, junior security officer Clem walks Morrow from cryo sleep, tells Morrow that there's a fire. We get the whole explanation. We get the entire understanding that who really is running this ship is Morrow. And as she said, there is one mission, keep your eye on mission. And we now get to experience in episode 5, which I like the way they did that, because you go 1, 2, 3, 4 wondering, is this guy, is he heartless? Is he not a human being? He knows what's going on. We figured out in the last episode that we spoke on the last NJ chat, Blurred's Word, that he was human because he was sweating, right? He said they could feel your fear. They could feel your fear. And then you see just clogs of sweat running down his face. So you know this brother is scared for his life. But the xenomorph ignores him. Goes really close, does the whole, I don't know what that was, the growl, the something, whatever, with its gross second mouth right next to his face. And you're thinking, oh my goodness, which also is a throwback to that moment in Alien where, shout out to Sigourney Weaver, Ripley is in the hallway and she has decided in this moment, I don't give two flippity flaps what you are. You're on my ship and I don't like you and I refuse to show you I'm scared. But we know, the whole audience knows Ripley is scared. She refused to show it to this animal thing being taking over her ship. And it faces her and sticks out a second mouth, like right next to her mouth, right next to her face. And she turns her face like, I think your grody halitosis looking self needs to get out of my face. And then it like backs off. We have that moment with Murrow where he's trying to save these rich white people's butt, saying, y'all need to get out of the building. Y'all need to move. You need to go. You need to not be scared. And they don't care. They don't listen. They laugh at him. They think, you know, we're like, oh, okay, well, they all gonna die. Oh, well, they do. And we get the back and forth, like this gentleman, he's a warrior extraordinaire. We see that in the flashbacks, right? And we see the dynamic of the ship. We see that people really had no respect for these entities. They did not care about these aliens. They were there for a mission. They didn't like each other, except for the people that were, you know, bouncing uglies in, you know, every single place they weren't supposed to. Nobody was really doing their job properly. Things weren't locked. Things weren't checked. Things weren't put away. And I'm thinking, what kind, you know, if these corporations are the big money bags thinking folk of the future, right? There sure is a lot of slack a lacking going on. Nobody checks anything. Nobody checks for locks. People just eating over the species. They touch stuff. People just, you know, dropping drawers and going at it in the back. And like, the security guard, he's got other missions and he knows everybody bouncing, bunking and doing other things. And he's like, whatever, dude. And I'm like, what? None of this would have happened had you been doing your jobs. Like, why are we not being professional? So lesson learned, people, you know, this ain't no Grey's Anatomy in space. Like, this isn't, you know, y'all need to pay attention because then this happens. So we're playing cleanup for all the grossness that y'all are doing. And, well, we have Zafiri is killed by the xenomorph outside the door and everyone is dead. And Morrow locks himself in the panic room and waits to be shuttled off to Earth while it's being careened. And so we now know within space, it all is a flashback. We get to see what's happening with the individual alien species that the rich, arrogant, jerk face potato salad with raisins is going to claim that he owns, because what is it? Possession is 90% of the law. Losers, weepers, finders, keepers. And so we have a plant that is uncalled, that we haven't spoken about. Kirsch happened across it, right? We have an eyeball, very, very smart eyeball. We have xenomorphs with eggs. Lots of eggs. I mean, the little tiny little things that we can laugh at that I think is really necessary, because in any other show, this would just be too graphic for me, too bloody for me. And even though I like zombie apocalypse slasher movies, I think sometimes when you have the overtly graphic, you know, brains everywhere and jugulars cut and blah, 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 you kind of go overboard. But there's so much to laugh with and laugh at And there's so much homage of the past that it makes it such brilliant work. And it's bite-sized, right? Because it's episodic. You got it in little tiny bites. I love that. That was brilliant. And I say that because, you know, you have things like the kids. They're adults and people just dying left and right. They're like, oh, well, la-di-da, everything is fine. And you're like, oh, my God, what? You know, that kind of stuff. And you laugh at the sheep, you know, Dolly looking around everything. And I think it was really, really well done. The going back and forth and understanding where we are with humanity at the point, you know, and again, kudos to the people that wrote this and thought of this, because the actors, I thought, played every single role really well. And I think if you're looking at it from a social commentary perspective, just because you have a lot of money and just because you're full of yourself and have a lot of ego doesn't mean you're going to make the right moves for humanity as a whole. And that entire ship lost its life. Okay. So they were inconsequential. It didn't matter. And one of the little quips and funny things was when Wendy says to her brother, when she stumbles across the eggs, she tells the boys, stay with the omelet. And I'm like, omelet. And then I'm like, oh my God, it's all the eggs, y'all. The eggs that they took for science purposes and research. And I'm thinking that was hilarious. And every little thing that goes really far, gross, there is a ha ha ha, really, really far funny. And everything in the middle meets, because, you know, humanity is about everything in between. It's not just the gray. It's not just the white. It's not just the black. It's all of it together that paints the beautiful picture. But In Space, No One, amazing episode, flashback. We now know all the species and what we're dealing with and how bad booty they're bad. What a bad brother Mr. Morrow is. And he's there with the mission and the xenomorphs are coming to take everybody. So Nikita, The Fly, episode 6.
Thank you, Jewel. So many things I chuckled at here. One, when we're talking about the sounds that they're making, in my mind, it's like that thing slobbering and being close to your ear and making those weird sounds. Like, I can't see you, but I can smell you, and I want to plant my gross little baby alien inside of you.
It's halitosis. It's funky, man. That's gross.
So I'm just like, well, you're too scared to smell whatever. But I love your descriptions and the discussion on this episode. One, very informative, getting the information for the title and bringing it back to the original Alien. Just if you haven't seen it, please watch it. It's classic and it's brilliant, by the way. It is the beginning of the Alien franchise. And a lot of things Noah Hawley did, you know, paid homage to that. I just thought it was just genius. I think that whole episode is deep because now it opens your eyes and you know what's going on. So thank you so much for that, Jewel. The next episode, which is episode 6, is The Fly. Now this episode, wow. This is tensions rise as powerful enemies confront each other. A dangerous plan unfolds and curiosity leads to deadly consequences. Noah Hawley wrote this episode, Noah Hawley and Lisa Long. And it's directed by Olga Hoxodottir. It's, man, very, very, very well done. I like that he had other people also. I mean, he wrote and directed a lot of the episodes, but I like that he had other people's ideas being in there. So let's go on into episode 6, The Fly. In it, Smee is talking. Someone uses the idea that, we know they're called the Lost Boys. And I want to kind of give you a refresher on that. The kids have been turned into these synths and they're called the Lost Boys. The idea is from Peter Pan. Every night, Cavalier reads to them from Peter Pan so that, you know, they feel the idea they're never going to grow up. They never gonna grow up. They're children inside of adult bodies though. And now we're in here where the aliens have hit Earth. like we said, and now we know why everything happened. The engineer was the bad guy, by the way. I don't know. Spoil it for you. Sorry, but you'll watch it and you'll see that. Okay. Because that was kind of like a, oh, snap. I didn't even know. All right. So what we have here, they have this meeting, the big corporate people, about getting the aliens back. You know what I mean? And Cavalier's acting all, and it really bothered me that this young man wasn't wearing any shoes. Might seem like a small thing, but all I can say in my brain is worms. Anyway, he shows up, he puts his dirty feet on the table. He acts all arrogant as he meets Mother, and who Morrow has been communicating with. And there's a history between Morrow and Mother. You know, her family saved him, and he is very loyal to that. And what we have, the young boy has, when Morrow realizes that these are children, he has tied into the one vulnerable young boy. And I'm like, wow, things are getting very, I kind of thought to myself, that's so manipulative to use. I mean, you know, this is a child, to use this boy's family to do terrible things. And one of the things that he's using him for is to get his egg back. Okay. Cause you have to remember, they brought the eggs back to the ship. They're going to use, you know, experiment and figure out how to use them for their benefit. Remember when I read to you that curiosity leads to deadly consequences. The eye is very, very intelligent. The eye ends up, you know, initially thinking that they're human beings and doesn't understand why they don't die or what their issue is. The eye continues to learn. Marge is super freaking smart. Okay. And as one of the kids is feeding the aliens, goes in a cage, gets trapped in a cage, ends up getting done in the cage. You know, that's I never, ever, ever stop laughing whenever and this is kind of terrible. The synths get killed or whatever. They all the way back from Alien. Original Alien, they make that gurgling noise. They're all plastic and melt all down and everything. It's gross, but it's also funny to me. I don't know why it's funny to me. I don't know what that says about me. Anyway, so they get now the alien realizes, oh, they're not people. So I can't attach to them. You know, that is a realization that comes to the alien, the Marge. The eyeball, remember? So now we have that out of the way. Check. The little boy is trying to figure out how to get someone in there so that they can get an egg thing planted in them. Nibs is having some kind of psychotic break in the psychiatrist's office. This is what I realized when Nibs said she was pregnant. And I was like, what? I mean, what is going on? What kind of books are they giving these kids to read? So when Nibs was thinking she was pregnant and the psychiatrist is saying, there's no way you can possibly be pregnant. That is not how this works. Talking to her as if she's rational and Nibs junks on her like a spider. I was beside myself. I was like, oh snap. Nibs really is like twisted sister for real. And I was like, they take her to get her fixed. They take her to go get, you know, erase her memory. That doesn't really do any good because remember, they have their subconscious is in this body that they're inhabiting. I said this before, you know, she may not know what it is to die, but she knows what pain is. And that's what you're really seeing, this fear and these things. I thought this was very well played out in showing that what your subconscious retains becomes a reality to you. And for Nibs, that was a reality to her. She also knows that those eggs lay babies in human beings. And one had attached to her face. I think it was the eye that attached to her face. But the eye obviously is not one of those things that can get you pregnant. And that ain't what's happening when they splat in the body. You know, come out of the body like that, break out. I can always remember the first time I watched Alien. And I saw the alien bust out of the cavity of the woman. I tell you, I said this the last time and I'm still there. That's the one thing made me afraid of spiders and anything else. You don't know where they're laying their eggs at. You don't know what's happening. This episode though was so vivid and so fast moving, I think, that for me, I'm going to say, and I said this and I'm saying it again, every single episode was excellent. Every single episode told the story in a way that had you follow, you know, you would think what the outcome would be. But the reality of it is the one thing that you see that is consistent is that Wendy is getting stronger and stronger. And Wendy is coming to realize that human beings are not such good creatures. Jewel?
Agreed. I think I really enjoyed this episode, and I think that Wendy really is starting to realize that the promises that were given to her, the ideas that were planted in her, that maybe it's not exactly as the arrogant young genius was trying to sell her. Remember, as Nikita, thank you so much for that description and flashback of why they're called the Lost Boys and why what we're talking about. The Lost Boys in Peter Pan, in the story of Peter Pan and Neverland, is a bunch of children, usually mostly boys, which is why they're called boys, that are growing up in Neverland, and they don't have goals, they don't have objectives. They're just young little kids that refuse to grow up. And their leader of sorts is Peter Pan. And they're all lost because they don't have guidance. And that's one of the reasons why Wendy is brought, the first girl amongst the Lost Boys, to nurture them and guide them, because they're lost in childhood. They don't want to grow up, but they obviously need guidance. And she is supposed to be brought to them and be their mother. And so if we look at that metaphor with this arrogant, rich, gross, barefoot, white guy, kid, young dude that thinks he's the smartest person in the room. He's like, okay, so I'm going to have all these kids, and I'm certainly not going to parent them. And eventually they're going to need some of their own kind, in quotes, because he doesn't consider them human. They're guinea pigs. And the idea is everyone wants to live forever. And they are all guinea pigs to see if eventually, not only can he have someone to talk to, because no one is smart enough to converse with, according to him, he wants to be able to eventually stay a boy forever. He wants to be immortal. That's the idea. Wendy realizes now they're not really lost boys. They're guinea pigs. Humans are trash. This dude is trash. Nothing lasts forever. And on top of it, I'm wondering why the audience members didn't pick up that Smee wasn't a lost boy. He was a pirate belonging to Captain Hook. And we have not just Smee, but we have the others as well, right? And Curly. These two are pirates, and Smee was actually the right-hand man of Captain Hook. And the arrogant young man, he is Hook. He's not Peter Pan, okay? He wants to steal the magic for himself. So if we are living in this metaphor, Wendy, she catches it immediately. I'm going to go back to the name of this episode. It's The Fly. The Fly was also a movie in 1986 with Jeff Goldblum. And it is literally him as a scientist trying to move the band of progress and technology forward. If anybody has seen it, and if anybody knows about it, it was actually a grotesquely, amazingly well-written movie. I loved it. I love The Fly. And he was testing teleportation. And he was on the cusp of creating a device that works. And in practicing, one, you get into a pod, and the idea was from one pod, you could be teleported, your whole body, to another pod, okay? And I don't want to spoil it for y'all, but a fly steps into it, and it's successful, but the human being he is no longer is the human being that he starts off to be. So there's a lot of commentary on the interwebs that it's an homage to, you know, the 70s and 80s and the movies back then and technology and how we're growing and everything. I kind of took it when I saw it as a fly in the ointment. Everything is going well for Mr. Arrogant. Everything is, he's above the fray. He's above the mess. He's going to win. He's found, he just happened to find all these aliens and he's so excited. And yay upon yay, the transference of the brains and the mental soul of the children into the synthetic bodies. It works. So eventually he too will live forever and forever be a magical boy. But unbeknownst to him, one of the kids is being contacted by Murrow to do what he needs to do. He is now told these synthetics, they live forever. This octopus face, Marge, alien eyeball done found out that they can die. And yes, Nikita's absolutely 100% right. They're not bioganic. They're synthetic, so she can't go into somebody's eyeball because she tried with Nibs, but Nibs was too strong. And now she realizes with the death of one of them that they're synthetics. They're not human beings, right? And all of this is happening in the background. For me, I was like, oh, there's a fly in the ointment. He don't know this is happening. Oh, that's so dope. That's pretty cool. Because when you're so arrogant, you think nothing can harm you. Nothing can touch you. Nothing can go wrong. All the best plans you've made, you think you've had contingencies. Meanwhile, Kirsch is looking at it from afar and watching the bigger picture. And he sees everything happen. Okay. And he knows what's going on. For me, this was one of the best episodes. I think there was tons of metaphors to be had. I think Wendy Gaines steps into her leadership role and understands it. I think with the death of one of them, they all realize that maybe they're not immortal per se, but they are definitely stronger than human beings. And it's not just humans they should be concerned about, because these alien flies that eat their inorganic material, they're also a threat. So if their mental backups aren't taken care of, then they can be harmed. So maybe we shouldn't be trusting these human beings, because not only are they fragile, but they dumb, and they don't have all the contingency plans in the works. Like, maybe we shouldn't be following them as closely as we should. And I thought, for me, that was such a grown-up moment. You know, and we also think Mr. Arrogant Man, he's running the show and all the AI is following him because they're programmed to do so. Kirsch gives it another level, right? He doesn't say anything. He sees everything play out and he keeps it close to the vest because, and this is just my translation of it. Here you have, this arrogant, rich young man who does not believe he needs to answer to any other human being, and he believes he's above the synthetics. They're just AI, they're just programs, and they have to do what I say. He is above both of them, and he's trying to create something bigger and better to then put his body, his brain, into this to be something bigger, this next step in evolution, this next step in creation. And all the senses are yes, 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 you know, because they're programmed to do so. But also all the human beings, right? All the human beings are also yes, yes, and doing what he says. Kirsch and Eyeball and Wendy, those three, are the only ones stepping back and saying, maybe it's not all yes, yes. Maybe everything isn't quite what it seems and appears to be. And so for this, for me, this was the catalyst and the turning point of, oh, snap, there's going to be a rebellion. You know, there's going to be a mutiny. People are going to take over. This isn't going to work the way everybody thinks it is. Y'all better watch that eyeball and dirty feet, gross man. He's going to get what's coming to him. I was excited and I really, really enjoyed it. And yeah, it had me really, really thinking a few things, like layers upon layers. So shout out to, again, Noah Hawley, Lisa Long, and Olga Hawksdaughter for everything in The Fly, because that was an amazing episode. Nikita?
Thank you, Jewel. This is where we see the creation has outgrown the creator, you know, and I think that that's just incredibly brilliant. One of the things I want to say, though, when you brought up The Fly, we cannot forget Vincent Price, the 1958 version, classic, 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 which gets you right into when you watch the remake, which is also very, very good. So watch them all. I mean, it, you know, the Fly, it was an excellent movie. That was the beginning. And before I digress, I will just say that movie was so well done and I really enjoyed it. Thank you for bringing that up. And I agree with you and everything that you were saying. This episode was a brilliant, brilliant episode. Look, all of them are. This is the one, though, where you come to the reality here. Humans aren't that smart, and they stop at a certain point. And another thing is when you look at Kirsch, Kirsch is always looking at them like, child, please, you are an idiot, but go ahead, keep going. You know, that's how he looks at them all the time. Like, I know you lying. Okay, he's so smart, right? Because he is contemplating his next move and he is willing to sacrifice the humans in order to look at the next chapter and continue moving forward. He has no respect for the creator because he is better than the creator. And like I said previously, you know, he semi respects Morrow because he's partially not human, right? And he has cyber parts and things like that. So I thought it was really, really genius and very well done. This next episode is called Emergence, though, and this is it. This is the seventh episode, and it is genius. At this point, though, we know that, you know, the psychiatrist's husband has bit the dust. He is doing the work of Morrow, and I feel some kind of way at a point where I'm like, this child was willing to put his friend's brother in there, and when he couldn't, his desperateness, his psychiatrist who helps to keep his mental okay, he was okay putting her husband in that situation. And the eye is watching all this. Marge is watching all of this, like, you know, she's really starting to judge humans. I think it's just like, these human beings, they don't even have loyalty to their own people. But he is not a human, right? So when the creature gets in and does its thing, slightly hides Arthur's body, you know, he's following the orders of Morrow in his head. He doesn't realize, though, that Kirsch is watching this whole thing, can hear everything. And Cavalier doesn't even know what's going on back on the home planet while he's in this meeting. Smee comes in, sees the body, and is like, what are you doing? Character. It's so hard for me because I'm like looking at a grown man and he's like, what are you doing? What's happening? Oh, he's dead? Well, that's terrible. Oh, wow. So we're not going to go play. And then, you know, slightly explains everything because he sees the body and he decides to help him. He decides to help his friend because that's his friend, you know, and he takes the body to the beach because that's what Morrow has told him. And then security comes on board. You know, you got security on the in the lab. You have security that comes in from the other corporation to come and get their stuff. And Wendy realizes that, hey, you know, we're dying and y'all covering it up. And we also didn't tell you she can talk to these creatures. She can talk to these aliens. That's no good. Okay. But maybe good for them. So, you know, Wendy convinces Nibs to join her, and she didn't like that Nibs got her memory wiped. She thought that was wrong. We should be able to remember everything. These are our experiences, you know, and the reality that she is really a product for them. You know, they don't see her as human. They don't see her as like them because she's not. She's not. And she decides, her brother decides, and she says, okay, when he comes to her with it, that they're going to escape because the therapist has told him how to escape. The husband, who is now alien incubator, okay, and on her way out, Wendy goes into the system and releases the xenomorph because she can communicate with him. And they killed a whole bunch of scientists. Kirsch finds Slightly and Smee trying to take the body. And Kirsch is like, whatever. Okay. He helps them because he has an alternative plan, you know, and so much is happening. And then there it is. The egg comes out of him before Morrow can get to him. And, you know, little baby, little egg creature, you know, runs off. And then they come, Morrow and them are coming on the land. And Morrow gets kidnapped. And everything just gets really fast done. Morrow's in company, you know, and put in the glass cage. And like a specimen, by the way, if you really, really pay attention, those glass cages are for the specimens. That's where they end up getting put. You know, I found that very interesting. Who's a specimen? Now, when you think about it, right? You know, Nibs is helping, then Nibs gets hurt, and there's a choice that has to be made. This is where I was like, oh my gosh, she's going to kill her brother. And she is making a determination whether he's like them or not. They're not like us, you know? When she realizes he's a human being too, he's fallible. They're impervious. They're immortal. They can't die. I mean, look, think about it. Even when they get gurgled, you know, they can be rebuilt and still have their same subconscious reprogrammed with the information that's necessary for them. So this is all like a reality of really they cannot die. Really they continue on and continue to learn and to grow as computers do when they're talking to each other and handshaking, you know, computers constantly learning the languages. I mean, that's a new thing that's happening. That's a thing that we better start paying attention to. Machine learning is one thing, but literal figuring out how to talk to other remote computers and translate no matter what language and take over things, that could seriously be a thing. Think about what I'm saying. Think about how real that is. Think about what we're watching in Alien Earth. Jewel?
I hear you. And first, thank you for the shout out to the great Vincent Price. So all of you are talking and chattering about the homages, remember that. I still think it was a fly in the ointment. And for me, the metaphor was when Mr. Cavalier is doing all this stuff and he doesn't know what's going on. Somebody smarter, quicker, or even just kids are touching things and messing things up. But you know, hey, Mr. Noah Hawley and Mrs. Long and everyone else, why did you name it The Fly? We would love to hear your input. Back to emergence. Yes. Oh my goodness. You're absolutely right. We're at a point where, and thank you, Nikita, because your expertise is always necessary when we're having discussions like these, when we're talking about the advancements of technology and computer programming and what's going on in the back end, we as human beings are really, really oblivious to the creations we've done because we have our own preconceived notions of the limits. And whether it's our own limits and whether it's our own thoughts of what we're doing, we have no idea once we've opened Pandora's box where it's going to go and how far it would go, because our computations and how quickly we will think things up and how quickly we will go from point A to point B, you know, it's quicker than any other idea of chess. When you're playing these games, when you're playing these concepts in your head, you have to think 2, 3, 4, 5 steps ahead. But what happens when a computer can do 1,000 steps ahead? What happens when the information you're thinking you're feeding it slowly is not enough? It's consumed it already, and it's consuming 50 other volumes in a half of a millisecond, which is what we see in the first 4 episodes with Wendy. He says he makes her smarter because he wants to have someone to talk to, and he's tired of not having anyone up to his intellect. But she is grossly overcompensated and grown out of whatever programming he thought he had in there. And we have now this this moment where what are we being faced with? And I agree with you 100%. We have Hermit knowing that this is a dangerous place for his sister. We have the lady, the psychiatrist dame. She realizes Nibs needs more help, that the transition wasn't great. They remove her memory, hoping that they can help her. That upsets Wendy, because that is a manipulation of the weak human beings thinking they can change something that should not be something they should be able to touch, right? Because you wouldn't have done that to a human being. You wouldn't have gone in and thought, I'm going to wipe away these memories, because you would think that would be horrendous. And she realizes they do not see them as human. And maybe she shouldn't be thinking of themselves as human. Maybe they should be seen as something more. And in this moment of her brother saying, we got to go, and having it confirmed by Arthur, who is the husband of the psychiatrist, Miss Dame, they have an argument. He says, this is morally wrong. Everything Cavalier is doing is wrong. We said we were doing this for the science. We said we were doing this for progress. He is doing monstrous things. You cannot possibly be okay with this. And she says, all companies and progress is lined and filled with monstrous stuff. Why did you think that it was going to be any different? And he's like, huh? What kind of monstrous? So that's how he ends up alone in the room and, you know, dead. But before that, he has a conversation with Wendy's brother. And Wendy's brother thinks it's going to be something bigger, that he's going to fight. And they're going to have to throw hands, because he's going to defend his sister, and they're going to book. They're going to leap. They're going to jump. They're going to bounce. He looks up at the camera and he pauses stuff. And he starts typing with his back blocking the camera. And his words belie the things that he writes on the screen. You're absolutely right. Everybody's safe. We have trackers on everyone. So no one is going to get out. No one's going to be in danger. Things are going to be okay. And while he's saying those words, he's typing codes to cut the tracking devices to assure him, you're absolutely right. Your sister is not safe. They do not have her best interests at heart. They are indeed human beings in there. And they're not just human beings. They're children. And they're children being thrust upon the most unreal expectations and scenarios that not even adults are being expected to do. And it's monstrous. And yeah, maybe you should get the heck out of Dodge. Just run. Don't look back. That's what's being conveyed, but that's not what he's saying. And he understands, yeah, he's going to get his sister and he's going to go. Wendy meets up with her brother and he's like, we got to go. It's not safe. Da-da-da. She goes, okay, well, let me go get the others. And he goes, no, we can't get the others. And she's like, but they're my siblings. Like, you're my sibling. And in that moment, he realizes he's been asking this question for 7 episodes now. Is she really my sister, Marcy? Is she my human baby sister? And he's been met with yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. And his feelings say yes. And, you know, some people say yes and some people like no. But in this moment, his eyes question whether or not he can believe that's his actual sister or something different. And she realizes in that moment, because they both come to an understanding that neither one of them are meeting of the minds at the moment, that as closely as she loves this man before her as her brother, and as protective as she is for him, she is for these young children that she became sibling to and mother, right? Wendy, Lost Boys, to, and she knows no one else would understand her transition. These kids her other siblings, albeit not like her brother, they would be the only ones to understand, much like he would be the only one to understand their life before the transition, right? And so she notices, but they're my siblings. And he says, well, yeah, okay, but you need to hurry. In that moment, we see wavering on both parts mentally. As Nikita said, they get out, they leave. The xenomorph face hugger is inside of the belly, comes out. She can talk. Wendy can talk to the xenomorphs, all of them. Remember, we talked about it in the first episode 1-4, in the last NJ chat. And she can discuss with them, talk to them. She's translated their language. They can talk to each other. She can hear what no one else around them can hear. For some reason, she has a connection. And she says it. She says to her brother and to others, they didn't ask for you to do this. Just like we didn't ask for you to do this to us. You are out there slicing, dicing, and using them as research. And they're alive and scared and came from another place. And you're being the most inhumane, monstrous. You're the ones being monstrous. You're doing that to them. Right? We get to the boat and she has used the xenomorph to get away from soldiers and other things. They're on the boat and Nibs has a flash of craziness like she did with the dame psychiatrist lady. She is going to go all out. She wants to leave. So she's using her strength and the craziness in her brains to just start fighting against these soldiers. And in that moment, Hermit makes a split decision that maybe they're not going to get away. And if they don't get away, Wendy's going to use the xenomorph to kill all the human beings. And he cannot, that doesn't sit well with him. And he shoots Nibs with an electric gun. And Wendy, in that moment, realizes, what did you do? What did you do? Why did you pick their side and not my side? But in his mind, he's thinking, what did you do? What did you do? Why did you pick their side and not my side? And kudos to the acting, clap, 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 because on his end, he sees a number 9. On her end, she sees a number 6. They are on the same, you have betrayed me. You are not my sibling. What are you doing? Why don't you love me? Why do you want harm to me? And flip it. The other person is thinking the exact same thing. But one is thinking, where has your humanity gone? And the other one is thinking, how could humans be such monsters? That's where I was left off in Emergence. And it was just, woo! And what a segue, because if the last question left with Wendy is, how can human be such monsters? Episode 8 is The Real Monsters. Nikita.
I felt that because I ask that question all the time. How can human beings be such monsters? That's the social question of the day, isn't it? You know, when a young girl figures it out, and adults still haven't wrapped their brain around it. When the predator becomes the prey, it's no fun, is it? So I thought it was a really, really excellent episode. And one of the things I want to say, you know, the emergence of who's actually the strong and who's actually the monster and who's the prey, right? I thought it was interesting when I read what Noah Hawley had to say. I like to think what's on the director's mind. We hadn't talked about that. But in this particular episode, I was curious because it flipped so quickly, as Jewel said, and brilliantly well done. It can't be a good thing to have the monster as, you know, you're talking to this monster. We know in the original Aliens, it wasn't so much as talking to the monster, but the monster saw Sigourney Weaver as mother because it was the first thing it... we know it doesn't have eyes, experienced as it came out of the egg. I found this to be a great episode in that with her ability to communicate in the frequency that the monster speaks. Holly said he was fascinated by a scene in Aliens, the original, where the alien queen interacts with the drones. You all remember that? When all those eggs were up against the wall, everybody was in the egg. Everybody was, it was so, wow, it was crazy. He says, well, you know, even without CGI back then, they were able to do horror in such a way that you, it was visceral. It was absolutely visceral. Not a whole lot of major special effects now, bells and whistles and everything, and it was still incredibly effective. That's why Alien is one of the most powerful horror franchises out there for aliens, along with Predator. I'm going to always give Predator its props too. One of the big question marks was if fans were going to buy this idea about the alien, the young girl talking to the, communicating with the alien. I didn't want her to have a xenomorph as a pet, but if it seems like an alliance has been struck, what are the interesting possibilities that we could pull out of that? And because this is a horror story, we have to assume that ultimately, I wouldn't bet on this working out. Those xenomorphs are never going to be your pet. So I would think that they are, there's a respect in that, or seeing that this person or this creature that, that saw them as they came out and is able to communicate with them could be an ally. But remember, sometimes your allies become your enemies, as we're seeing happen right now. So this could be a foreshadowing, not sure. But David Risado commented on the filming of his death scene. That's the psychiatrist that ended up being egg bait. He said, I didn't enjoy putting it on it, but by the end, it had associations with trauma. Also, it's not the most comfortable. I guess that suit that they wear to bust out of the egg, and or, you know, doing the right when it gets killed in the cell. And he said it was still a dream come true to be able to do a chest buster scene in Alien. So everyone played their part, and I'm sure it had to be crazy thinking that maybe you were going to be a main character. Remember, the Lost Boys always can come back. They can get fixed. But human beings, or at least until we talk about episode 8, you don't think once the eggs get in there that they're going to come back. When the chest buster happens, now you've elevated your expectation and tied yourself more to the character. The shock and the horror of it also feels that much more real. Every single time you see someone get a face hugger and then the camera closes in, the little arms tighten, and then you know the egg thing is getting ready to go down. And immediately your eye goes to the stomach, right? Like, when is it going to happen? When is it going to happen? And poosh, the egg thing baby comes out. And then they also talked about the why the brother, as Jewel pointed out, had to, you know, shoot Nibs. And when she questions, you know, why did you do that? Why did you kill Nibs or hurt Nibs? And he said, because she's dangerous. You literally see, I'm going to say this, and I don't know how everyone else watches movies, but I look at how the character is, it's character playing the role that's assigned to them, and how the structure of the role is going. Is it convincing? I was convinced by both these characters, okay? He was scared for his life, and he realized that the scents were incredibly strong and will kill all the humans. And he also realized that his sister is also dangerous. And she is not the sister that died. She is not the sister that he thought was dead. I'll say that. Because she is. Her body is. It's just her consciousness inside of this very strong being that looks just like, you know, doesn't look like a sister, but acts like a sister, remembers things that a sister remembers. It's very difficult to try to separate those things. But the reality is, when you see Nibs kill that guy, you're like, oh snap. And then you know your sister can make clicky sounds and talk to the dirt aliens, and he's told her many times, they are predators. They are not your friends. They are predators. They are not human beings. And in her mind, human beings are predators too. What's the difference? You know, it's an interesting dynamic, and it is something that you watch play out and you think to yourself, man, whose side am I on? Am I on the side of humanity? Because even I know humanity disappoints, because we're human beings. We're not infallible. But am I on the side of the machines or the computers taking over? I look at Kirsch and I realize the propensity to destroy all of humanity for the end goal is also in that computer. That is him. Next episode, which is episode 8, The Real Monsters, that's where we really get to decide as viewers watching this, who the real monsters are. I know a lot of people have already made that decision. Obviously, it's the Xenomorph. But is it, though? Boy Cavalier, he is a very selfish, selfish person. He's in charge of this corporation. He has these people here. He is willing to sacrifice human beings to get what he wants. The whole reason that, you know, this is happening is because he doesn't care about humanity. He thinks he's above that. Not realizing you yourself are human. And even if he does realize it, he thinks that nothing can happen to him. Like I said, everybody's scared, you know, when the predator becomes the prey. And in a way, he's a predator. You know, estranged siblings and the real monsters, a new power dynamic emerges. Weyland Yutani engages in a ground war with Prodigy. Weyland Yutani is the corporation that Mara works for, whose forces have dwindled in manpower because that alien is wiping them out. He moves so fast, moves so fast that it is insane. And the weird thing is when I was watching episode 8, I'm like, it is speeding up so fast. And you see them in the glass cage and Smee, you know, talks to her and says, you know, she's not looking at her brother as he's one of them. And he literally, in such a childlike way, I love this character of Smee. Everything he says, you're like, he's such a child, but children are innocent and tell the truth. And he's like, he's one of us. And that's all there was to it in his mind. He is one of us, you know? He's a lost boy too, right? Because he's under the, you know, guidance of this being controlled by Cavalier because he has the lung, you know, that they gave him. So I thought that was brilliant. I thought the way they played it, the way it was communicated and talked, I just thought it was just genius. And Cavalier, he's getting chased all over the place, you know, and still he has a sickness in my mind when I think about it. You know, I feel like, dude, think this is a game. He really, really, really does think he's, you know, in charge of the Lost Boys. He really, really does. But Wendy lets him know, you're an adult. You're not a child. And you're a monster. You know, and you thought you could control us. And you lie. You lie. That's what humans do. They lie and they destroy. They don't build. They don't create. They don't have empathy. They don't have dignity or humanity or respect for anything that's different than them. That is really, really, truly, in my opinion, a very, very, very strong message on society. Whether you saw it as that, I felt it as that because it spoke to the truth of what we say a lot of times just in talking. You know, human beings suck, right? We say that, you know, we say, how do you don't have any humanity. The decisions that are made by people in power affect all of us without any kind of deference or reality or reason in how it affects our social construct, our mental construct, our physical construct, our human construct. They don't see us as human beings. And so it's easy to destroy us. But when you get found out and when you get seen and the prey uprises and now becomes the predator, that don't feel good to the predator, does it? Now, we call the Xenomorph a predator because we're afraid of it and because it's out there killing everything. As all of this is going on, Marge is like, I'm out, baby. I got to figure out how to get... She knows that the human has the egg baby in it. She goes out to the beach. I was like, oh, God, because she couldn't get inside the brother's eye. I could not believe that she could use a dead... I'm spoiling it, just so you know. The psychiatrist is still not dead as because of Marge. That's where we left off in the emergence. But you also see that Cavalier and Mara are in the glass prison. And Mara's like, I'm your friend. I didn't kill your parents. slightly showed him how IDGAF works. Okay, so there's that. So I thought that was interesting, but what I was concerned with, I didn't see the remorse in slightly in taking the therapist. You know, this is, I think the way that they completely separated, the feeling for friendship versus the choice for family. Would we make that decision? Would we as people, as human beings make that decision? The writer determined that I suspect they would. and they wrote it in such a way that you're either looking at slightly like, how could you be so naive? Because he's a child. How could you turn against your, how could you even think about your friend's brother? Because he's a child and his parents are everything. How could you go and put your therapist's husband, the man that she loves, in there? Because he's a child and his parents are everything. I think that that should be something that you should pay close attention to. Maybe other people didn't. They were just like, hey, this makes sense to me. Just get a body in there. You know what I'm saying? But these are people that helped you come back so that you're able to be here. I think the reality is when Wendy starts to really use her leadership appropriately, they have Cavalier in that cage strung up like Jesus Christ, okay? I'm just saying. And he's smiling because he's a sick, twisted dude. He is really like that kind of person that's like, oh my God, I'm so proud my students have surpassed the master. You know, I'm just thinking to myself, dude, I hope they kill you. And I hope there's a next season where they might kill you. And if they don't kill you, they better do something. Always remember, this is 2 years before the actual alien. So I thought that the last episode, the final episode, was genius, and it left me wanting. And that's what you do when you want to get a second season. This better not be the last season or the last we see of Alien Earth. Jewel?
Wow. Wowzers. You're absolutely right. We learn so much in this one, and we feel vindicated in a lot of things. We know that Wendy Nibbs, Slightly Smee, and Curly are imprisoned while Joe and Morrow are imprisoned in another cell. Wendy uses her connection to the network to block the cameras, and she starts doing background searches for her brother and other things. And you're absolutely right. The childlike sentiment that we get from all the children when they have to make choices that children should never have to make. Do you save your friends? Do you save your teachers? Do you save your teachers' loved ones? Or do you save your mom and siblings? Nobody should ever question that. You know what I'm saying? That's never going to happen. What we do learn about Cavalier, Boy Cavalier, is when he approaches Wendy Nibbs, Slightly Smee, and Curly in their prison, he thinks he's got the upper hand initially, right? And he tells them a story. This is how we know, and when we absolutely know that Wendy's had enough. And she's cut the feed. You know, she's looking through all the computers while she's standing there in this cage, locked up. And Cavalier says, quite arrogantly, I might add, that basically, and I'm paraphrasing here, and I'm putting my own sentiment in there too, because why not? This is what it's about. We chatting, right? You think y'all know what strength is? You think you know what smart is? You think you know everything? When I was 6 years old, I had an abusive father, and he was horrible. I made a synthetic with my own bare hands at the age of 6. And with that synthetic, I programmed it to kill my abusive father. And we realize that that's why he never cared that the children would happen across this ship with people that might be dead, and doing the research and going after the search and rescue of the aliens and putting them in harm's way, because at 6, he was a murderer. A cold-blooded, calculated murderer. And he got away with it. And he's letting them know that he has no compunctions, no aspirations to be Jesus, which I thought was interesting that you brought that up at the end. He's strung up like that, right? So I think that was so brilliant. So thank you for that segue, Nikita. In hearing the monstrosity and in hearing the confession, Wendy immediately flips, snaps her fingers, and all the locks in all the cages unlock and the doors fly open, and Nibs charges the bodyguard, rips them to shreds, and she looks at Cavalier like, what now? I was going to say the MF word, but we don't cuss on the show. So what now, clown face? What now, boo-boo? What now, dumb butt? What you going to do now? And it's almost like all the TikToks and all the whatchamacallit where you see something horrible happen and everybody has a split second to breathe and then you get the run. And he runs. Like, that's what I heard in the background of my mind. And he goes. He runs for it. And I'm feeling very Pippa Le Pew-ish. Like, she's like, you can run all you want, but you can't hide. I know everything on this island and I know where everybody is. I am the island, basically. She has that aura about her. It's actually pretty cool. And she goes after him. And she wants to find her brother. And she's met with the Marge squid face octopus eyeball, trying to get into her brother's eye, and she saves him. But she has to also battle the synthetic bald guy, British synthetic bald guy, for her brother's safety. Because while he is going to teach them both a lesson, so he thinks, the eyeball just wants to be in a place that makes it safe. It wants to be able to be safe and not so squishable. So here she is, Wendy, with no ninja training whatsoever, has to combat and fight this AI that's obviously been a bodyguard for over 50, 11 years. And her brother is trying to not get eviscerated by this squid eyeball. And she is fighting, and kicking the eyeball across the room. And the eyeball's like, oh, frustrated. And then decides, well, I'm never going to be able to get anywhere with these people here. That synthetic monster won't let me. Just, I can't be great. I can't be fabulous. And runs away from a drain. And I think, yay, eyeball, let's the young man live. I love that for Wendy. And in a moment where she thinks her brother's really going to not live because the AI is heading straight for him, she screams with her whole heart. And it makes him incapable of moving. And that's when she realizes that the sentiment she felt when she opened the cage, that she is the island, she really is the island. Like, she really is. It was one thing to be able to go through the security cameras. It's another thing to be able to talk through, turn things off, locate people, find my earbuds, turn on a TV in another room. That's another thing. It's a whole nother potato source of, coolness and cake to be able to understand that your enemy you're about to throw hands with, you can stop them in their tracks and basically push them over or leave them there stuck in their own body, incapable of moving. And she's like, bet, peace out. And she takes her brother and she leaves. And Nikita's already explained everything else that happens there. We know that the eyeball finds Arthur's body and its corpse on the beach. They're going to talk to the people that have done all these things to them. And we have Kirsch, Cavalier, Adam, Dame, and Morrow in one cage. The xenomorph is on top of the cage. It is the lock. It is keeping them inside. And one guy is like, you think you could keep me in here? And he walks out and the xenomorph just eats him like some piping hot fries from McDonald's that just came out. And it's just yum, 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 yum. And they all realize, oh, Schneige, you're right. We're stuck here. And she ends it with, we rule now. So the sentiment that she is the island and they're going to run this house y'all, you can't own us, run us, and make us do anything anymore. And all of this is happening whilst the lady who owned the ship initially and her entourage lands on the beach. What a cliffhanger. Holy criminy. What? What's going on? What? You can't just leave it like that. So I know for me, there is going to be a season 2, and there should be a 3, 4, and 5 too. There should be quite a few. I'm excited. Nikita's right. I mean, I see the synthetics being able to come back over and over and over and over and over again. I think once the human beings have been ripped apart, they just can't come back again unless Marge is taking space. And is she one of those cloning where she can just clone herself by osmosis or you know, like being able to split herself in half? Can she be both eyeballs? I mean, is there another eyeball where she can have babies with so that she can take over more than one? I don't know, because we know the face huggers. We know the face huggers, they come from eggs, right? So there's a big xenomorph as per old canon. And like ants or termites, they pop out eggs, right? And then from the eggs come the face huggers. And there's a metamorphosis. There's a bunch of change that has to happen. You have the queen giving birth to an egg, and the egg is the first iteration. And then the larva comes out, and it's a face hugger. It goes onto somebody's face or an animal's face. It squirts its grossness inside the belly, and where it incubates, and then it comes out, and then it grows into the xenomorph, right? But we don't know anything about this eyeball. And we don't know nothing about the plant that just sucked people up and ate it. So there's a lot more to come. And I hope we get to see it. And I hope it happens quicker, sooner rather than later. And I'm excited to see where what the future holds, Nikita.
I'm sorry. I had to, you got me tickled there. You're absolutely correct. And I agree with everything you said. Here's another thing that I thought was funny. It is crazy that when you program these people's, subconscious or emotions or whatever it is that you're programming into them, you also program their arrogance, right? You know, Kirsch and Adam, both of them were incredibly arrogant. But you know what's so funny to me is that Adam thought he was so ultimate and he thought everyone was beneath him, to not be aware that the new software that the kids got was newer and better than the software they had. So that's why Wendy was able to do that to him. I just thought that was so funny. They were so unaware. This feeling of, I am better than all of them. And, you know, they're just, you cannot beat me. And she goes, wrong. You know? And then the reality of, yes, she is the island. She is able to become a part of every computer system because of the upgrade the Cavalier had given her. She was able to interface with every system. We don't know how far her range is, but we knew it was certainly wide enough and proposed wide enough a net that she could see where her brother was. All right. And I don't know how far that was from everything, but they had to take a boat to get there, right? So I thought this was very well written. I love the cliffhanger. I love all of the little nuances of it, and also all of the messages of it. Some of you will say, I don't know, I see a whole bunch of social messaging. I'll put it in perspective. You know, five corporations are in charge of each portion of the world. The air, the land, the sea, you know, five corporations. Five corporations determine who gets what. This science ship went out here and got one of each item and colonized, probably invaded some planets to pick one item off of each of those places to bring those aliens back. That's how we always want to know what's going on somewhere else without minding our own homes. You know, that's a funny thing about Earthlings. You know, so you go and you bring that back, and then you bring all this danger to humanity without any care for humanity, only what it can achieve for you as a corporation. And then you're fighting over who owns what, like who owns people, who owns these creatures. That's pretty terrible, where you don't see any living thing, no matter what entity it is, as important, or their being is important. Only what it can do for you. That's the importance. Only what it can do for you, how it can achieve money for you. No one's talking about saving lives, by the way. No one, neither one of these two corporations warring right now aren't talking about saving lives. They're talking about ownership and control, you know? Very familiar. And then when the young girl, Wendy, takes over, and they all come back to their original names, by the way, and the brother is torn because this is his sister. He will become a part of the Lost Boys. I'm wondering how this will move and go on, where his part comes in. And I also thought it was just brilliant, your explanation, Jewel, all of it. Clap, 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 as always. It makes me very happy to do this with you because we are like-minded. And I'm also enlightened about how you see things. Genius concept of she is the island because it's the truth. She controls everything and we're in charge now. You know, we rule. Humanity is done. We rule. The prey are now the predators. I thought it was genius. I thought it was important, you know, and Holly said that in this episode, he wanted to explore whether Wendy would prefer to be human or other. When you can have the trueness of without emotions and understand that, you know, what human beings truly are, infallible and perfect creatures who have the ability to hate sometimes more than love. I don't know that the choice would be to be human, but I love my humanity because I also have empathy and machines do not have empathy. It is not an emotion that they can learn. Even though these people's, you know, subconscious has that, that can quickly be eroded by software upgrade when you think about it, right? And while reaffirming that the hybrid's limitations would prove to be an obstacle, their limitations are their children. And they need to learn, you know, what they see is that adults aren't necessarily good. At least these adults aren't good. It's worrisome because she has all this power, but she doesn't yet have the perspective Joe thinks she needs, which is to have empathy and love for humanity. And the choice for him is simple. His friends died on that boat. Those hybrids killed his friend. Nib killed people he cared about. Nibs. You know, he also added that he wanted to see how Xenomorph adapts to a new environment. On some level, Jurassic Park is one of the grandfather texts of all stories that grapples with people making terrible decisions in the name of money and science. Remember what I was talking about? And if you've watched Jurassic Park, you know, once again, putting creatures under a microscope, like, let's be clear. And I see this happening now today, by the way. I don't really think dinosaurs should be roaming around out here. Okay. Cause dinosaurs, I don't know. I don't know how they think or whatever. You know what I'm saying? But those dinosaurs kind of like eat people or something. I don't know. I don't know. I think I'd pass on that, but we always have this curiosity. What if we bring the dinosaurs back? What if we turn a lion into a saber-toothed tiger? What if we just leave human beings out in the desert to starve to death? Can they survive? I mean, I don't know. The weirdest things that human beings think about and think that that's going to help humanity is bizarre to me. How about we just starve people and don't give them money and see if they rebel? You know, stuff like that. I love that he went to Jurassic Park to show money and science. Always trying to figure out new things. Why do we go to the moon all of the time? Why do we want to see if we can live on Mars instead of making the planet that we live on better? You know, instead of, you know, starving the planet that we live on. Why are we looking to go somewhere else instead of taking care of the home that we have? I've always thought that was kind of a weird process and a concept. You know, I don't know that everybody talks about that. Wendy's actions were also intended, and this is Noah Hawley talking about why he wrote this episode the way that he did. And I just thought it was genius, actually, to show how her trauma has impacted her. You know, all these kids had a terrible disease and their life was changed. The pain of having cancer, I said this before, and I really hope you hear me. Can you imagine what a child feels knowing that they might die? They don't know what death is, but they know that the pain that they're experiencing right now to keep them alive is traumatizing. And they have this chance to be here instead of having pain all the time. No pain. You don't even have to be a child to think that life is better with no pain. And right now, they don't have that. You know, I think she's angry. And Noah Hawley continues saying, I think she's angry and she's hurt. And I think she feels hurt. And she's grieving Isaac. She still hasn't necessarily. And that was the boy that was killed in the Marge was watching that happen. The, you know, well, it's not really a boy, right? The synth, one of her friends. you know, she still hasn't dealt with being a terminally ill kid and all the stuff that, that has, you know, the ideas of morality for her. You know, what we determine is moral. For kids, it's this, you teach them, don't lie, don't steal, don't cheat. And then they turn around and they look at adults lying, stealing, and cheating. Imagine when logic is the key to your sustainability, how illogical that is. When she sees her grave, he says, I think posting her grave and seeing her brother mourn the skeleton in the earth, she didn't really understand. And then she realized in that ground is her body. In that ground is Marcy. I think he wrote this really well. I also was interested in him when Holly said that Cavalier's reaction had multiple meanings, Cavalier being the boy genius. If you're Peter Pan and you want death to adults, thank you, Jewel, for pointing out that his father was abusive and he killed him at 6 years old. That doesn't make you a genius. That makes you a serial killer. Making the synth is interesting, but that makes you a murderer, a sociopath. All right. That's why you watch children to make sure they don't kill animals. You know what I mean? Because if they start doing that, you know, you might have a Jeffrey Dahmer on your hand. All right. So how great is it that children are going to rule now? And that's how Cavalier is seeing this. Like when he has that creepy smile at the end, it was bizarre. I mean, who knows what'll happen? So I think he certainly has a low point when Wendy holds up the mirror and says, you're an adult. You're not, you know, you made Lost Boys and you read books to us or whatever, but you're a grown up and you're a monster, you know? But then there's delight in the fact that she's picking up the matchbook and ready to burn it to the ground. A sociopath would love that. See, a sociopath wouldn't see the emotion of what she's saying. This is clarity. This is logic. A sociopath would be like, oh, I made another me. That's what I did. What do you think? He's going to end up being probably a sausage burger in the next season. All right. Then there's still, it's exciting to see what's going to happen. And I think that when we watch this, we think to ourselves, at least this is me. I'm going to say what I thought through this 1 through 8. I liked how it kept you moving in a what's next? What's next? Oh, snap. Oh, no. Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. And this is so good. And the writing is well done. And the story is very well done so that you can move on to the next season understanding there's going to be a progression because each episode was a progression, even showing the history. I just thought it was brilliant. I thought they did a great job. I think that given how, you know, Alien has done from the very first Alien to now, and this iteration of Alien Earth was brilliant for this generation, this time. When you use the tools that are used today for a generation that grew up with iPads and cell phones and computers from birth, this is perfect. I don't know that they would be able to relate to the first Alien, but it's an enjoyable movie to watch. The first Alien was a foreshadowing of the future. The first Alien was the first one we started seeing the technology and what it could be for those of us that are old enough to remember that. For those of us who remember each iteration of Alien and how it progressed and to becoming a little bit concerned that this might be the future to the reality of now in 2025, this very well might already be the future. Jewel?
I agree with you. I agree with you. And I thank you for this opportunity as usual. It's been fun watching the show, discussing the show. I think it's definitely a commentary about the social aspects of where we are right now, where the future is going to take us. The shows before and the movies, the games, everything around Alien, it was also social commentary. What the arrogance of humanity to move forward in exploration and not think that they would come across an entity that could do us so much harm that we would not be ready for it. And then the arrogance as it progressed in the various different other movies that we could harness that creature, that we could utilize that creature. And then this new iteration of the franchise, explaining it bit by bit in a way that we are all living this world right now. We are living a world of, is AI good? Is AI bad? Where can it go? Where will it take us? We are living in a world right now where, do children's lives matter? Do we want to save the future? How do we save the future? Can we cure death and pain. And we see it play out between the smallest of interactions between the husband and wife. We have the coder husband that believes in ethics and morality, and the psychiatrist wife who, I mean, you're a doctor, you're a medical doctor, and you're supposed to be on the cusp of helping children work through the most unrealistic circuses ever. And that's, you're facing your mortality at a child's age. Again, thank you, Nikita, for putting it in perspective. Children don't even understand what death is, the finality of that, the ramifications of what that means, but understanding what pain is. I know we had this discussion last time for the episodes with Nibs and why she was so scared of the eyeball, Marge, because in that moment, the trauma of maybe I'm not immortal, maybe they lied to us, maybe I can feel pain. And that was the most horrendous feeling I've ever felt in my life. And I'm a kid. I'm a kid, and they told me I would never feel that again. I'm a kid, and they told me I could not die. I'm a kid, and they told me that nothing that I went through I would ever have to experience. And in this moment, I was feeling all these fears again, only to find out later that one of them, Toodles, dies, and it is possible to no longer exist. They lied to you. Nothing that they're telling you is real. And this doctor who was supposed to nurture you through this transitional metamorphosis of child that's dying into this godlike body that can never die, never feel pain, only grow, only enjoy what life has to offer, the world has to offer and beyond. We find out in her arguments with her husband that she don't give two flippity flaps about them. We are supposed to think that she does, but she's really here for the science of it all. And the science and the breakthrough. And can you imagine where we're going? She don't care. She did not care at the end of the day. And I also like that dichotomy too. He's a coder. He's just ones and zeros. He's just supposed to be the non-substantial, no humanity, just the hardware, software within the heart. He is supposed to be cold. He's supposed to be calculated. It's not supposed to matter. And yet, the person who is entrusted with the feelings, the emotions, the growth, the how you work through it and get all the squishy feelings of humanity and the real messiness, the, oh my God, this again, all the trauma, the melodramatic crap. She's supposed to be the nurturing, the kind, the female, the woman, the mom for these kids. And we see how skewed that is. He is more concerned about humanity and where we're going with this. And he understands what he's doing. And he says, we can't be part of this. We cannot be okay. You cannot be okay with this. They're kids. They're kids. And she's like, yeah, and I'm doing this because it's science, you know, my name and a breakthrough. And with this growth with the children and with Wendy, we see humanity has a definition in art. Humanity has a definition in our lives. Each individual human being listening to this, you have your own descriptor and definition of what humanity means to you. There is a scientific biology, you know, Merriam-Webster's Encyclopedia Britannica definition of what a human being is and what humanity may or may not mean. But that is a multifaceted, very huge concept. And when we see what we've all seen in these horror movies be depicted as monstrous, we know, I mean, we notice, right? We know that everything we've seen on these screens we have created because it came from the minds of humans. You feel me? I mean, I don't know if you guys understand what I'm saying. Everything we're seeing in these stories, everything we've read in these books, everything we've seen in these shows, everything we've seen in these movies, it has come from the mind of a human being. these thoughts, these scenarios, these concepts, these situations. And usually it's based on life, because life reflects art, art reflects life. So the monstrosities that we see that you gasp and you're like, the horrors, that came from humanity. Okay. That's the monster is us. We are, that's why we have the debates and maybe you should be having the debates. Crack open a book, y'all. Open up Frankenstein. Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, phenomenal author and book. It's still classic, still amazing. Y'all keep calling the monster Frankenstein, and you're right, but you're wrong, because the creation that you guys dress up as for Halloween, that's not Frankenstein. That's the monster. That's his creation. But he's not the monster because he didn't create himself. Dr. Frankenstein did. Frankenstein is the monster because of the atrocities and the horrendous things that he did creating this thing, and then expecting this thing to meet his expectations and not do horrendous things, when all he taught him was the monstrous deeds of human beings. I mean, you grave robbing and putting people together and putting dead corpses together to then light it up because you're God. You know, Mr. Cavalier did the same. I'm going to take the most innocent among us going through the most horrendous of things. I'm going to pay their families off, tell them, don't look back and don't worry. We're going to cure them. But he doesn't really cure them. He shoves them into the most psychologically deranged scenario in hopes that one day he can be immortal. He's not doing it for the philanthropy of it. He's doing it so that he can live forever. And he can be, you know, the one true God of the world. That's why he's doing it. And so we get to see humanity for all its gross undercarriage. We get to see it for what it is. And Wendy, as the metaphor, as the mother that's going to bring these new creations, this new evolution of what humanity could be, maybe, you know, because what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to have humanity at this point? And how do we translate that? What is the new definition a la Merriam-Webster or Encyclopedia Britannica in the year 2035 or 2135? You know, what does that look like? And why does she have more compassion for everyone, including these monstrous creatures from outer space? And the human beings here don't even have empathy, sympathy, and compassion for these children going through the horrors they're going through. So I thought that was very interesting. And episodes 1 through 8, just really, it was, I laughed, I cried, it moved me. And I was really intrigued. And clap, 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 kudos. Thank you for bringing back Alien. I had no idea how much I missed it. It was not just another jump scare in the theater. This made a lot of, parts in my mind move, and it made me embrace the past and look forward to the future. And I can't wait for season 2. Nikita.
Thank you, Jewel. Thank you. And thank you for giving us that breakdown and your feelings on how you saw it. And I concur. I thought it was brilliant. And thank you for your assessment. So check this out. We're getting ready to close it down. But before we do, I want to give you this information about Sigourney Weaver. You know, we love us some Sigourney Weaver. Okay. Sigourney Weaver. I'm reading this from the Hollywood Reporter. And I also saw it in Deadline and Discussing Films. So I want to make sure I give those sources out so you don't think I'm just making stuff up. Okay. Sigourney Weaver won't rule out returning to her alien character, Ripley. Ripley! In the light of 50 new pages of script that she's seen from producer Walter Hill. She says, Walter Hill is a very good friend of mine, and he wrote 50 pages where Ripley would be now. And they are quite extraordinary. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I had a meeting with Fox Disney, or whoever it is now. It's Disney, baby. And let me tell you something. Let's make that happen. Let's bring Sigourney Weaver back. Heck, she could end up in season 2 of Alien Earth. She could be, you know, because it's only 2 years before the actual alien. So she could be the mom or the grandma of Ripley or whatever. I don't know. But something. So I love it. I love it. I love it. And on that, I'm going to give you what I think about this, episodes 1 through 8 of Alien Earth. I myself, Nikita, give it 3 shades. And I don't mean like I give you shade. I mean like cool. It was 3 times cooler than anything I've seen in a minute. So 3 shades for me. Jewel?
Oh, most definitely. Yeah. I read that article and bring her back. How dare y'all not even have Ripley in there? Bring her back for good measure. Bring her back for posterity. Bring her back for her fine self being just the bad lady that she is. She was just amazing. She's like the greatest soldier ever in space. So bring her back in any capacity. We can't wait to see her. And I gave it episodes 1 through 8. Every single episode for me was 3 jewels. Every single one. There was not a miss among them. You have hits and misses, and every single one hit it out of the park, hit it beyond the sun, the solar system, and into xenomorphic places. 3 jewels.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that, my friend. And I'm so happy that we both agree. Alien Earth knocked it out of the park. You know, we aren't always as like, oh yeah, this is so great. This is so great. We actually are kind of critical, super, super critical. And, the fact that we see this as an excellent, excellent representation of classic Alien Earth is very telling. We are very, very, I think we give constructive criticism, but I think we're very direct and to the point about how we see movies and how we look at movies. And I think that this, being for this time in 2025, was a perfect, perfect assimilation into the classics of Alien. Alien Earth. Check it out. It's on Hulu, which will be Disney. So, you know, make sure, or FX, I think, make sure you watch it, talk about it. Check us out. If you got this far, that means you really liked what you heard, or we hope you liked what you heard. And we'll see you again next week. So have a great weekend. Have a great day. Be blessed. Stay safe. Watch Alien Earth. Ciao.
Bye.